listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you on this beautiful Friday afternoon in Washington, D.C. It is, of course, Friday, so it is time for Brunch with Bernie. Senator Bernie Sanders. Uh-oh, hang on just a second, Bernie. It's going to take me just a moment here because I forgot to open my call screen software. And it doesn't seem to be. Here it goes. Senator Bernie Sanders will be here in just a minute as soon as I can put him on the air, which will take a moment. But you can check out his website at sanders.senate.gov. There's a great newsletter there called the Bernie Buzz that you can subscribe to. And the website itself is a great source of fine content. And here we come as this software slowly. Oh, man. Technology is wonderful, but it can take time. There we go. Bernie.
How are you, Tom?
My apologies. Okay. I was so busy running around here, I forgot to set the studio up. So what's on your schedule? What's going on?
Well, it has been a very, very busy week, and let me just review some of what is going on and some of the work we've been doing. Before we do that, this is Memorial Day weekend. We want to remember those men and women who gave their lives for this country and the families that have never forgotten and are suffering the consequences of that. And as chairman of the Veterans Committee, I want to reach out to all of our veterans and thank them for their service to our country and to tell them that we're trying to do the best to make sure that they get all the benefits and services that they are entitled to. So that's an issue that we are working hard on us in remembering this Memorial Day, Memorial Day weekend. In the Senate, we had the Ag Bill coming up, and Ag touches on many issues in addition to just farming. It touches on nutrition. It touches on commodities in general. I offered an amendment which could not get to the floor at this point, and I was disappointed by that, and that is you may be aware that, Tom, in Europe right now there's an investigation going on about the possibility of the rigging of oil prices among some of the major oil companies in the world. I would like the appropriate agency here, which actually functions under the jurisdiction of the Ag Department, the Commodities Futures Trading Commission, to take a look at that and see to what degree oil price rigging may be taking place here in America. What we do know about oil prices is that right now, unlike economic theory, where presumably prices go up when supply is limited and demand is great, right now demand is limited and supply is great. And yet we have seen very high gas prices at the pump. I personally believe that in addition to the possibility of the rigging of oil prices, what we do know for a fact is that on the oil futures market, there is rampant speculation by Wall Street companies who now control about 80% of the oil futures market. And what I want to see is that excessive speculation ending, which can substantially lower prices for consumers at the gas pump. So bottom line is what the oil futures market should be about is end users, people who actually use oil, buying what they need, not Wall Street driving prices up through excessive speculation. What I did manage to get on the floor just the other day is an amendment which would allow states the right to go forward with labeling for genetically modified foods. And I think the issue here is that the American people are increasingly concerned about the quality of the food they are eating and what their kids are eating. In the state of Vermont, our state legislature overwhelmingly passed legislation to allow the state to label GMO food. And in Connecticut, the state Senate there did it, I think it was 44-1 or something, just overwhelming vote. California, that issue was on the ballot in that state in November. 47% of the people voted for food labeling, despite some $50 million coming in in a media campaign against the effort from Monsanto and the other major food high biotech companies and large food corporations. So I think all over this country there is concern about the issue, and we want states to have the right to label GMO food. We did not win. We lost. We only got 27 votes, but we are making progress. We got the leadership of the Democratic Party on board. Majority Leader Reid voted for it. Chuck Schumer voted for it. So I think we're making some progress. We're seeing states make progress, and we're going to continue working on that issue. We also this week held a rally with a number of senators to call for the reauthorization and improvement and expansion of the Older Americans Act. Everybody knows about Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. Not everybody knows about the Older Americans Act, which was also developed during the 1960s. And what that bill does is it is the bill that funds the Meals on Wheels program, the what we call the congregate meal program. That's where for senior centers all over this country, providing good quality food for seniors who are there. It funds employment programs for seniors. It makes it easier also for seniors to stay at home. One of the problems that we have in this country, Tom, is that if seniors are not getting food that they need, getting some housekeeping help, often they're forced into a nursing home, which is not what they want, not what their family wants, and is much more expensive to that whole healthcare system and government spending than keeping people at home. And that's what the Older Americans Act focuses on. So we have increased funding for it, and we hope to get a markup on that in committee in the not-too-distant future. Also, I think as many people are aware, there was a hearing, not on my committee, but on Carl Levin's committee dealing with oversight in the Senate, dealing with Apple and their tax avoidance policies. And Apple is just one example of almost every major multinational corporation. Right now in Congress, as we have talked about many times, there are some folks who want to cut Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, education, nutrition, and really balance the budget on the backs of some of the most vulnerable people in this country. Meanwhile, one out of four corporations in America pays zero in taxes. And you have companies like Apple, General Electric, Bank of America, many other large corporations who use these tax shelters in the Cayman Islands and all over the world. Ireland have very, very sophisticated approach to avoid paying U.S. taxes. So the end result of that is that in the United States, our corporations are paying a lower percentage of their profits in revenue and taxes than any other major country on Earth. And the percentage of taxes that corporations as a whole are paying have declined very, very significantly over the years, adding to our deficit problem. So we want real tax reform. We want these corporations to be starting to pay their fair share of taxes so that we don't balance the budget on the backs of the elderly, the children, the sick, or the poor, but on that these some of these companies that are enjoying record-breaking profits help us with deficit reduction. There's been a whole lot of discussion, as everybody knows, on this IRS business. Clearly, the IRS is absolutely wrong. When you do policy, you don't look at just one group of people, in this case, conservatives. But what we should also understand, that the root cause of this problem has to do with the 501c4 program, by which, as a result of Citizens United, corporations now are able to pour huge amounts of money into the political process, in secret without being disclosed. So the underlying cause of the scandal has to do with campaign finance reform in America. Make sure that we repeal Citizens United through a Supreme Court, through a constitutional amendment, and also deal with this 501c4 issue by the Congress.
Senator Bernie Sanders with us, taking your calls right after this.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
It's Brunch with Bernie, our national town hall meeting. Check out Senator Sanders' website at sanders.senate.gov. Welcome back to the place where smart people get their news, the Tom Hartman Program. It's our Brunch with Bernie hour. Senator Bernie Sanders on the line with us, taking your calls in our national town hall meeting. And Bob in Dearborn, Michigan, watching Free Speech TV on Dish Satellite TV. You are on the air with Senator Sanders.
Yeah, before my question, I wanted to get both of your comments on an idea. Recently, it was reported that scientists are very close to being able to clone a human being. Would the senator, I'd like to get the senator and Elizabeth Warren to volunteer for that so that other states could also have honest senators.
Well, thanks very much.
Good one, Bob. Your question?
Yeah. Given the following facts, that the Republicans have blocked every attempt to slow global warming, and that was at least partly the cause of the huge tornado we had, and you know all they've done is protect the big polluters from regulation, and also that Tom Coburn voted against Hurricane Sandy aid, and he tried to block health care for 9/11 first responders. You know, and the people of Oklahoma keep reelecting Coburn, and all he does is protect billionaires from paying taxes. Why should we give, given all these facts, why should we give any money at all to help Oklahoma?
The answer, Bob, is I think you know the answer. And the answer is that Oklahoma is not Senator Coburn. Oklahoma has working people. They have kids, and they just suffered a terrible, terrible tragedy where, 20 kids were killed and massive damage. And they are part of America, just as Vermonters. And so when Vermont had its problem with Hurricane Irene a couple of years ago, I was on the floor saying, you know what? Last I heard, this was the United States of America. We are one country, and we come to the aid of each other when each state has a tragedy, and that's what we've got to do. So, you know, that's why I will support funding for to help the people of Oklahoma. But what I do want to say, and getting back to your first point, is it is impossible to know, and nobody does know, you know, that an extreme weather disturbance, whether it's a storm, or a tornado or anything else, is the direct cause of global warming. What we do know is that as a result of global warming, there is likely to be significantly more extreme weather disturbances. That's what we do know. And as Bob indicated, what we also know, and this is really just embarrassing for us as Americans, that we have a major political party, i.e. the Republican Party, that has refused to recognize what the overwhelming majority of scientists are saying, and that is that global warming is real. Global warming is largely caused by man-made activities. Global warming is already causing devastating problems in our country and throughout the world, and that we have got to address it. And it is almost beyond my comprehension that we have a major political party which refuses to acknowledge those realities. So what we are doing, I am working hard on this, and a number of us are. We have introduced legislation calling for a tax on carbon, and are working very hard to move this country away from fossil fuels to energy efficiency and to such sustainable energies as wind, solar, geothermal, biomass. And when you do that, you not only cut back on greenhouse gas emissions, you also create a heck of a lot of jobs in the process. And you save people, in many cases, money on their fuel bills. So we're going to work very, very hard on that issue. I'm a member of the Energy Committee and the Environmental Committee. I'm working with Ron Wyden, who's chairman of the Energy Committee, Barbara Boxer, chair of the Environmental Committee, to see if we can have some success in those areas.
Okay. Where did it go? Here we go. Tim, in Sycamore, Illinois, you are on the air with Senator Sanders. Thanks for listening to WCPT.
Well, thank you, Tom. Nice to speak to you, and thank you for taking my call, Senator Sanders. My question is, what do you think of the Trans-Pacific Partnership? I mean, it sounds a lot like what happened in the 90s with NAFTA, and what, if anything, Congress can and will do about it, because it sounds like President Obama is willing and ready to sign off on it.
Right. Good question. Very good question. You know, Tom and I have chatted for years about our trade policy and the horrendous impact that our trade policy, whether it's NAFTA, CAFTA, permanent normal trade relations with China and others, have had on the American worker. And in my view, the origin of these trade agreements stems from corporate America's desire to make substantially more money by being able to shut down manufacturing plants in this country. And in the last 10 years or so, we have lost about 60,000 factories I mean, when we think about the American economy, we almost don't think about manufacturing anymore, because it becomes, it's a much significantly reduced part of what the American economy is about. Well, those jobs used to pay people decent wages, and they're gone. And that's one of the reasons why people with high school degrees now are earning wages way, way, way below what they used to. And I think one of the factors, not the only factor, automation has played a big role in that, but clearly one of the factors is that virtually every major corporation in America has shut down plants in America and moved to China and elsewhere. So I have voted consistently against these trade agreements. And I have great concern about the Pacific, the Trans-Pacific Partnership trade agreement as well. I do not want to see American workers competing against the people in Vietnam. I was in Vietnam a couple of years ago, and they are trying very hard to, you know, improve their economy. Their workers there are paid 25, 30 cents an hour. I don't want to see American workers forced to compete against those type of wages. So I think what we need to do is demand that corporate America start reinvesting in this country, corporate America start paying taxes in this country, rather than running to tax havens like the Cayman Islands to avoid taxes, and countries like Vietnam in order to not employ American workers. So I have real concerns about that trade agreement.
And Bernie, if this is brought forward on fast track, it can't be filibustered. Do I understand that correctly?
Well, we're working on that, Tom. Yes, we are. Fast track prevents a filibuster. That is correct.
Yeah. Senator Bernie Sanders taking your calls in our national town hall meeting, Brunch with Bernie. Check out Bernie's website at sanders.senate.gov. You can sign up for the Bernie Buzz. And they update that website several times a day. Lots of great news information there. It's one of the few, actually, of all the people in the Senate. It really is a good content site.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
So, sanders.senate.gov. You can also check out our website, tomhartman.com. Drop into our free live chat room. We'll be back with more of Bernie answering your questions right after this. Welcome back. It's our Brunch with Bernie hour here on the Tom Hartman Program. Senator Bernie Sanders taking your calls. And David in Halfway, Missouri, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Yeah, hi, Bernie. It's good to talk to you. I got a couple of things. One leads into the other. Is there no way to stop people from sliding these protection acts into bills for, like, Monsanto? And if not, we need to slide in, like, a protection act for the commons, you know, like, so the next president that comes in can't sell off all these lands to these frackers that belongs to the American people. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So,
okay, well, David asks a question about riders that are put in. I think he referenced this Monsanto rider. There was an effort to get it out. Actually, just the other day, Jeff Merkley of Oregon tried. I don't think he was able. I think his effort to get the amendment on the floor was blocked, and I strongly supported what Jeff was trying to do. I think we just have to be very careful when bills come forward. It is very easy in the dark of night for somebody in a conference committee or elsewhere to place in a little bit of a rider which benefits a major corporation. And David is absolutely right. That's something that we don't want to see.
John, watching Free Speech TV on the Dish Satellite TV Network in Columbus, Ohio. You are on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hey, Bernie. It's good to hear you today. I'm wondering, why can't the IRS website provide a page where you can go and look up what percentage of profits a given company pays in taxes? That way consumers could choose to support companies that choose to support America.
I don't know, John. That's a very good point. I don't know that it's the business of the IRS to have to report that, but I would hope that there are websites who do. And there is a lot of information. And you can go to my website, sanders.senate.gov. I think we still have up there a study that we did, which showed that there are dozens of major American corporations. General Electric comes to mind, Bank of America, others, who in a given year, despite making billions of dollars in profits, as a result of using these tax havens like the Cayman Islands and elsewhere, avoid paying any U.S. federal income taxes. And that is clearly an outrage. Companies enjoying huge profits, billions of dollars in profits, paying nothing in taxes is absurd. So they're all websites that are out there that have that information. Now, the debate that's taking place in Congress is twofold. The president, many Republicans are saying, we need tax reform. We need to look at these issues. But at the end of the day, to the degree that we do away with these loopholes, what you want to do is lower corporate tax rates. And we don't want any additional revenue from corporate America. I think that that is very, very wrong. I think you want to do away with these loopholes, clearly. But at the end of the day, if we're going to protect the elderly and the children and the sick and the poor, we're going to need more revenue coming into the federal government. Revenue right now as a percentage of GDP is quite low compared to where it was in the last 60 years. So that is the issue, John, and I think people should be aware. And go to my website. There'll be one place you will find that information about major corporations who in some cases pay nothing in taxes, in other cases pay very little.
Howard in Hollywood, Florida, listening on the web stream for WCPT. You're on the air with Senator Sanders, Howard.
Yeah, just to follow on Bernie's point before I get into mine, one of the major reasons our national debt is going up so high is because of the lack of revenue. Everybody thinks it's just the spending. The spending is down, but the revenue coming in is not there. And the solution to that, and this is the thing that makes me raging angry, is that the Democrats are not going after the Republicans for destroying our economy. Tom, you have two videos, the two Santa Claus theory and the caucus room meetings. They right now are in total control. What is covered in those two subjects are right now controlling our economy totally. And something has got to be done. I don't know why Obama doesn't confront the Republicans on jobs bills and make it into a major issue.
Okay. So, jobs bills?
Well, let me just pick up on Howard's point. The good news is that we have seen in recent years, for a lot of reasons, a significant decline in the federal deficit. I think right now, as I recall, it is about $848 billion, which is a heck of a lot less than the $1.4 trillion it was some years ago. So we are making some progress on that. But Howard's point is absolutely right, and as he indicates, most people don't understand it. A budget is about two things. It's about the amount of money that you spend, but it's also about the amount of money that comes in. And we right now, as a percentage of GDP, are at almost the lowest rate of revenue that we have been in 60 years. And the reason for that, as I just mentioned a moment ago, is all of these corporate tax loopholes of companies like General Electric are paying nothing in taxes. Well, guess what? And one out of four corporations are paying nothing in taxes. Guess what? Less revenue is going to come in. So this is an issue that we have got to address. So Howard is absolutely right in pointing out it is not simply spending. It is also a question of revenue, and that's an issue that must be addressed. And second point, unemployment today, is the economy better than it was 5 years ago? Absolutely. Everybody will remember that when Obama first came in, we were losing 700,000 jobs a month. That is just unbelievable. Right now, job growth is too slow. Depending on any given month, it's 150,000, 200,000 jobs, nowhere near enough. But unemployment is, in fact, going down. But it is not as low as the official statistics indicate. And every week I make this point. If you look in the newspapers, they'll tell you unemployment today is about 7.5%. Not really. That figure does not include people who have given up looking for work in high unemployment areas and people who are working 20 hours a week when they want to work 40 hours a week. And that's when you look at the economy also, it does not reflect the fact that there are millions of American workers today, Tom, who are working longer hours for lower wages. It does not reflect the fact that for young people, the unemployment rate is outrageously high. People of color, very, very high. So we have got to start rebuilding our economy. Now, the good news is, as I mentioned earlier, we have made some real progress on deficit reduction. Now what we have to do is figure out how we create the millions of jobs that our people need. And the fastest way to do that is to rebuild our crumbling infrastructure, roads, bridges, airports, create a first-class rail system, water systems, put people to work. Second of all, we have to transform our energy system away from fossil fuel into energy efficiency and sustainable energy. And when you do that, you also create jobs. So Howard is absolutely right. We have got to focus on job creation because the economy for working families today is very, very poor.
Karen, listening on Progressive Voices Radio in Sacramento, California. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hi, thanks. Today we're out occupying Monsanto in Davis, and I would like you to tell me what percentage of your political colleagues actually understand the GMO issue is more than just the actual product, but it's the business ethics in terms of confiscating American farmers' land and patenting seeds and eventually owning the food supply.
Karen, great point. And to answer your questions, I suspect not many members do understand that reality. When you deal, and I don't, you know, now is not the time to get into a long, long discussion about GMOs, but Karen raises very important points, and that Monsanto is taking us into a new world. And it's a world that I have and many other people have real, real concerns about. And there has not been the kind of public discussion that we need as to whether or not we want to go into that world and what the potential dangers of that world are. So, Karen, thank you very much for that question. What we tried to do yesterday was offer a very conservative amendment. Didn't begin to touch the issues that Karen, the very legitimate issues that Karen is raising. And the issue that I wanted to talk about is, should states have the right to label GMO products? My state of Vermont wants to do it. Connecticut wants to do it. Other states are moving in that direction. What Monsanto and the other big companies will say is that states don't have the right to do that because it is a federal, it's within the federal sphere of action. I disagree with that. So I brought forth an amendment to make sure that states could do it. But Karen is right. The issue is bigger than GMO labeling, and it is an issue that needs a lot of discussion.
Bernie, we just have about 30 seconds to the break. Do you think that states will be able to label genetically modified products?
Well, they can. I mean, they could do it tomorrow. The problem is that Monsanto, with their incredible resources, Monsanto is a very heavily litigious corporation. They sue at the drop of a hat. So small states like Vermont, then, if we go forward, have to be prepared for a major lawsuit that could cost millions and millions of dollars.
Mm.
And that's what I wanted to address yesterday in yesterday's amendment.
To provide some legal protection to
right.
the states
so if Congress
at the federal level.
My amendment, then it's clear that states do have the right to go forward. That takes care of a major, major argument that Monsanto and their friends will make.
Wow. It's extraordinary. Senator Bernie Sanders with us, taking your calls in our national town hall meeting, Brunch with Bernie, here on the Tom Harkin program. Check out Bernie's website. He mentioned it a little earlier. It's sanders.senate.gov. And you can find the information on corporate taxes. You can sign up for the Bernie Buzz, his newsletter. Be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And, of course, there's TomHartman.com. You can drop into our live chat room and say hi to some of the finest minds in the world who are hanging out there. Or back to the place where despair is not an option, the Tom Hartman Program. It's our Brunch with Bernie Hour. Senator Sanders taking your calls. John, listening on KABQ in Albuquerque, New Mexico. You're on the air with Senator Sanders. John is not there. Okay, David, in Chicago, listening on WCPT. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Senator Sanders. I hope you have a nice weekend.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm calling because every month over 75,000 foreign legal workers come into the country, and I was hoping that S-744, this Gang of Eight immigration bill, would provide protections against bypassing American citizens. And yet at the last minute, Senator Hatch got in these amendments that essentially would allow Americans to be bypassed in favor of cheap foreign labor. So what can we do to, both in the Senate and as American citizens observing this process, take away this subsidy of cheap foreign labor, primarily H-1B and L-1, and the staple automatic green card? Because nobody can get a green card unless they're offered a job.
And this you've asked a great question, and actually it's something I had meant to talk about earlier in the program, so I thank you very much for raising it. Here's the story, folks. The immigration reform bill just came out of the Senate Judiciary Committee, and there are a lot of good things in that bill, a lot of good things. I think it's high time that we allowed 11 million people who are in this country now to move toward citizenship, give them a path to citizenship. I think the DREAM Act is very, very important, and I want to see that passed as well. But David raises the most serious problem with that bill, and that is, and here's the issue, it's under the concept of guest worker programs. Right now, as I mentioned a moment ago, real unemployment in this country is about 14%, especially high for young workers. Wages for high school graduates, people who don't have a lot of skills or education, has plummeted in recent years. Do we really believe that in the midst of that reality, what we need to have is hundreds of thousands of low-wage, unskilled workers coming into this country? That's the question. I think not. I think there are certain areas, certainly in agriculture, where we do need foreign labor. For whatever reason, Americans are not doing that kind of work. But I think that in many, many other areas, give you an example. If you go to swimming pools or beaches around this country in the summertime, you're going to find lifeguards who come from Europe. If you go to resorts in this country, you're going to find people working the front desk who come from other countries. You're going to find a variety of workers, or if you go to ski industries in Vermont and elsewhere, you're going to find ski instructors coming from other countries. Now, I think there are a whole lot of kids in this country who need some summer jobs, among other things, or year-round jobs, in order to save up some money to go to college. Do I think that American kids can be ski instructors or front desk people or lifeguards? Yeah, I do. And I just don't know why we want to bring in foreign workers to do those jobs. Second of all, in the area of what we call the H-1B program, that's the high-skilled area, many corporations are saying we cannot find high-skilled workers in order to do certain jobs. Well, I suspect that in certain instances, that is exactly true. Certain locations of the country, certain types of work. But here's the interesting point. What we have recently found out is that more than 9 million people in this country have degrees in science, technology, engineering, or math, but only about 3 million, one-third of those people, have jobs in those areas. And most importantly, Tom, what is supposed to happen if you can't find a worker? What is, under the rules of capitalism, what is supposed to happen?
Typically, you raise the wage that you're offering.
Right. Gee, I can't find an engineer. I'm going to have to raise the wages in order to attract that person. Well, guess what? Salaries in computer and math-related fields for workers with college degrees rose very, very slightly between the year 2000 and 2001. So I agree with David, and I am very concerned about these provisions. I think they were not good before. Senator Hatch made them worse. So there are certain areas, I do believe, that foreign workers can help us fill a gap and help us with our economy. But I think what the corporate world and the high-tech world are doing is really making an all-out effort in order to bring in cheap labor, both at the high-tech level, where foreign workers will work for lower wages, resulting in Americans not seeing the kind of wage increases they desperately need, and certainly for low-wage workers, where unemployment is so high and wages are so low. I just can't see the explanation for hundreds of thousands of low-skilled workers coming into this country. So immigration reform, yes. I believe that. My father was an immigrant, came to this country at the age of 17. We are a nation of immigrants. Immigration makes us stronger.
But having said that, I do not want to see the big money interest use under the guise of immigration reform, bringing huge numbers of cheap labor here to lower wages in this country.
Bernie, we're just a minute out from the end of the hour. Your thoughts on the week ahead and the state of America?
Well, I think we've touched on many of the important issues facing this country. One issue that we did not talk about is the issue of media monopoly. There is a lot of discussion, as you know, in this country right now about the possibility of the Koch brothers purchasing the Chicago Tribune Company, which has some 8 major daily newspapers in America. And I would hope that people will give voice to the fact that we do not need even more big money control over media in this country, especially with a very right-wing family. Concentration of ownership in media, to me, is a very, very big issue. Let's not make a bad situation even worse.
Has there ever been an effort to require media to be owned locally, that more than half the stockholders have?
Well, it's not, no. I mean, you got First Amendment stuff with news. In terms of television and radio, yes, there is an effort within law to emphasize localism and local control.
Senator Bernie Sanders, Bernie, thanks so much for being with us.
Good to be with you, Tom. Take care.
Always a pleasure. We will be back with Anything Goes Friday right after this, 58 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
A lot of amazing things going on in the world. Illinois, for example, is poised to say, nah, we're not going to do abstinence-only education here. You know, that may work down in Mississippi where you got, or Alabama or whatever the state is down there where they've got that, plus one of the highest teenage pregnancy rates and STD rates in the country. And I shouldn't be laughing about that. That's really tragic. But we're going to do science-based education. What an interesting idea. Also, the Congressional Budget Office has just come out and said that putting a tax on carbon would prevent a catastrophic future. You think? I mean, you know, just the fact that the CBO had to do the study is kind of mind exploding. But oh, and yesterday, the guy who called in, you know, why didn't Obama close Guantanamo? Quack, 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 quack. And Shane was reminding me, Shano and Danielle were reminding me after the show was over that the 11 weeks or whatever it was, this relatively brief period of time where President Obama had a veto-proof a filibuster-proof Senate was not when he began his term. It was a few months into it because there was that whole kerfuffle going on with Norm Coleman, who was still seated, and Al Franken. And then that got resolved. Al Franken got that seat. And then President Obama had a majority. And then in the meantime, Ted Kennedy had died, and Scott Brown ran in the special election. And then Scott Brown gets installed in that seat. And then President Obama loses his ability to overcome a filibuster again. And so this is the language that the Republicans have attached to pretty much every appropriations bill, the continuing resolutions year after year after year, and this one is actually attached to the NDAA. But, you know, and anytime they appropriate money, they just attach this prohibition on the title of it. This is Section 1022 of the NDAA of 2013. Prohibition on use of funds to construct or modify facilities in the United States to house detainees transferred from United States Naval Station Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. That's the title. Which is pretty self-explanatory, but here's the exact language. No amounts authorized to be appropriated or otherwise made available to the Department of Defense for fiscal year 2013. No amounts may be used to construct or modify any facility in the United States, its territories, or possessions to house any individual detained at Guantanamo. And it goes on, you know, with all the legal station and legal language about the United States Naval Station at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. The one exception is the prohibition in subsection A shall not apply to any modification of facilities at the United States Naval Station. In other words, you can upgrade Guantanamo, but you cannot bring those people here to this country. And I saw Lindsey Graham on TV this morning. He's going, we're not talking about drug dealers here, people who knocked over 7-Eleven. We're talking about terrorists. Like what? They're supermen? They're just, you know, terrorist man. Well, first of all, you're not always talking about terrorists. In fact, a lot of those people down there, there's no association with terrorism at all. They got sold because Bush went out and offered, you know, these bounties, these $5,000 bounties for Al-Qaeda members in Afghanistan when, you know, and Iraq. And so what happened was people would say, you know, a guy, you know, I'm a Hatfield. That McCoy family over there we've been feuding with for three generations, and I'm just going to tell the Americans that the head of the McCoy family is a terrorist and get my $5,000. Now, keep in mind, this is in a country where most people earn about $400 a year. So you can live for 11 years on this money. Not too shabby. Which is why we've got all these problems, and they had to torture people to try and get them to confess, and then you find out the confessions are phony confessions. And, you know, I mean, Bush just so screwed this country. Even Republicans get it, how badly this country has been screwed up by George Bush and his Republican buddies. It's just amazing. Anyhow, it's Anything Goes Friday, so get some of your calls. In fact, we'll turn to your calls here. Margie in Wisconsin Rapids, Wisconsin. Margie, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. I wanted to bring up a couple of things, specifically regarding the bridge collapse in Washington State.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to bring attention to people that there's some things going on next week on Wednesday at 12:30 Central Time. There is going to be a listening session where they are looking to increase the weight of a standard truck to 97,000 pounds.
Hmm.
They're also looking to increase the standard length of a trailer from 53 feet to 58 feet.
Now, is this federal legislation? These are federal highway standards?
This is going to be, they're looking at a rulemaking through the standardized highway form.
Right.
There's also a bill in Congress. One of them is that they want to increase the weights. There's another bill called SHPA. That bill would freeze truck weights and lengths at their current standard.
So dueling pieces of legislation, one that allows the trucking companies to jam a little more stuff in their trucks, and the other one that says, no, you can't do that. And right now, some of these trucks are so big that, as we saw with this bridge in Washington State, an oversized truck hit it and took out it. Now they've determined that the reason the thing collapsed was not because the truck was too heavy, but that it took out part of the overhead trestle, the superstructure, and that weakened the bridge and
right.
It collapsed.
And first, understand that when trucks get to be, you know, over the standard length and weight, which is 80,000 pounds,
right.
They must go through a permit process through each state that they are driving through.
Hmm.
And as part of that permit process, they receive routing from the state that is to give them, and they're not allowed to deviate for more than a mile off of that route.
Wow.
And the reason for that is to avoid these types of issues.
So did this thing in Washington State happen because you had a rogue trucker?
There were three things that happened. First of all, the permit should have never been issued. Number two, the pilot car went under the bridge with the detector, and that thing went off. Should have notified the truck driver that bridge was too low.
Right.
He is relying on two pieces of information, one from the state and one pilot car who's, as far as I'm concerned, that's the person whose fault it was because they never notified the truck driver that the bridge was too low when the detector hit it.
Right. Wow. Amazing. So Margie, your call for action is for people to contact their members of Congress and support
SHPA,
S-H-I-P-A. Which is freezing truck sizes where they're at right now. Okay. Margie, thank you. You seem to really know your stuff. Are you a truck driver?
Excuse me?
Are you a trucker?
Yes, I am.
Aha. Uh-huh. I figured, yeah, because you seem to really know your stuff, and you called in on Sirius Satellite Radio. So thank you very much for that, Bargy. I appreciate the information and the heads up, and I wish you the best in your efforts in your community's efforts to keep our roads safe and our bridges intact and all that sort of good stuff. By the way, Todd Akin, we're going to hit a break here in just a second, and then I'll pick up your calls after the break. But Todd Akin is lecturing. Remember the legitimate rape guy who had lost to Claire McCaskill in Missouri in the Senate race? He's lecturing Republicans now on how to win. Right? I'm serious. And he says, we should review our history, for example, so we can choose the right one. He's talking about the right cure for the Republican Party. We've all heard the group of advisors who think the cure is that the Republican Party should become less conservative. They fault imperfect candidates. While no candidate is perfect, including me. Todd. Yes, Republicans all need to become just like Todd Akin, and they'll win lots and lots of elections. You know, actually, I should not be making fun of Todd Akin. I should be seriously suggesting that every Republican candidate listen to him very carefully.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Because wouldn't it be great if all the Republican candidates did just as well as Todd Akin did in the last election? Welcome back, Tom Hartman here with you. Mr. Gomez, the Navy SEAL who is running against Ed Markey for the Senate seat in Massachusetts, is getting more and more unhinged. He's now called Mr. Markey pond scum, which I don't think is going to go over well with people in Massachusetts. They kind of like Ed Markey. I mean, you know, whether they're going to elect him senator or not, it looks like they probably will. You don't know. But they've been electing him to the House of Representatives for a long, long time. And you could say, my opponent opposes this position, or he wants to give corporate, tax breaks or whatever. But pond scum? Really? So Markey's lead is actually growing as a consequence of this. So maybe it's that Mr. Gomez is taking his campaign advice from Todd Akin. Maybe. Michael in Imperial Beach, California. Hey, Michael, what's up?
Hey, Mr. Hartman, Anything Goes Friday.
Indeed.
I took your advice, and I read Ishmael by Daniel Quinn. Very eye-opening book.
It is.
I loved when Ishmael took the side of the leavers, and the gentleman took the side of the takers, and Ishmael called him Bwana, wild. But check this out. If I had lost this paperback book, which was not in that good a shape, I would have to pay $115. Do you think that this is a statement about how bad our libraries are doing? Like our post.
Wait a minute. $115 for a copy of Ishmael?
No, if I had lost it. If I hadn't returned it and lost it.
Oh, I see. Your library, in other words, your library would charge you $115 if you failed to return the book. Okay.
Correct. $115, yeah. And it wasn't even that good a shape. It was a paperback.
Yeah, but here's the deal. That library, I mean, libraries are operating on increasingly tight budgets. It's a rough business where the people are very badly paid and the libraries are understaffed and underfunded. And when people walk off with books, it costs the library more than just the book. It costs the entire community access to that book. So that and I'm taking you at your word that's what your library charges. I used to use a library up in Montpelier, Vermont. It was a lot less than that. In fact, I lost a book. I mean, I physically lost a book that I had checked out of the book library and ended up paying, I think, $25 for it or something. But whatever. It's really, you're not just replacing the book. You're also paying a fine, essentially, for all the hassle and all the work that they're going to have to do in replacing it and for the people who couldn't get it when you had it. And what's wrong with that?
Correct. I just thought it was wild. I just wondered, though, is that a statement of how bad our commons are doing, like the bridge that collapsed in Washington? I mean, our commons are hurting.
It is, and libraries are part of our commons. And, yeah, actually, you could reframe that, and I guess I was close to doing that just a minute ago, talking about how badly funded our libraries are. Our libraries are part of our commons, and they're really struggling, too. What was your main carry-home from Ishmael? I'm just curious, Michael. What was the main message for you?
How I loved his analogy at the end about how we're in prison. You know, he said that prison, you have your little societies. There's the rich, there's the blank, and there's the user, you know, the people that get used.
Right.
And basically in the taker society, we're the same way. Even these rich people, the elite, they're still in prison, but they're the top of the food chain, and all of us are just at the bottom of the food chain in prison.
Yeah.
Because we're not leavers, we're takers.
Yeah. The leavers and takers concept was a brilliant one, and I loved that. My favorite part of Ishmael was understanding for the first time the worldview of animists. I had read about animism. I had learned about animism. Animism is arguably a religion where the people who are animists believe, and most indigenous people, most Native American tribes are animists. Rather than believing in one god, a monotheist, or multiple gods, polytheists, or gods in the skies, you know, the Nordic or the Greeks or whatever. Instead, they believe that everything that is alive around them is filled with the fire of life and has its own unique intelligence. Not perhaps intelligence the way that you or I would understand that word, but its own unique life, its own unique right to life, its own unique and extraordinary vitality. The fire of life is the phrase that Dan Quinn uses. And I really got it from reading Ishmael, what animism was, and what a powerful worldview or religion or way of viewing the world it is, and how much, frankly, I think we need it. We've lost that sense of the sacred, you know, that sense of awe, that you know, just looking at a tree. I mean, there's a tree by our marina that I hug whenever I walk by. I told the story one day. There was a guy riding a bicycle down the road, and I'm out here hugging this tree, and he yells at me, "No matter how hard you push, it ain't gonna fall over." And it was like, you know, I walk by and I just touch the tree, you know, "Hey, how you doing?" And it's like, but to an animist, I mean, the rocks have a story. Everything has a story. Everything is part of this extraordinary thing. So Ishmael is an amazing book. Michael, thanks for calling and sharing that with you. And it is appropriate for Anything Goes Friday. Eric in Lake Zurich, Illinois. Hey, Larry, Eric, what's up?
How you doing, Tom?
Great.
I was wondering what you thought of, instead of giving subsidies to, and I'm going to use GE as an example, and their wind, instead of giving subsidies to huge companies, straight to the companies, why don't we give it to somebody that would use the thing in the form of a voucher that they could only use to go back to that company to buy their product? And that way they would have to pay taxes on the product that was bought here in the United States, and yet we would still subsidize that company. They do this the Dutch do this, and what they did is they use small farmers, and by giving them a low-interest loan, they allowed them to put the windmills on their farms, in which the cost of the loan was less than the amount of the electricity that they produced.
Yeah, this is the same thing the Germans did with the solar panels for home roofs.
That's absolutely right. And, you know, we could do this in a lot of areas, especially, like, during the economic crash, I wondered why we didn't do this to homeowners for their mortgages.
Yeah.
A voucher that was only good to give to the banks to pay off your mortgage. We would have stimulated them.
Yeah, instead of handing trillions of dollars to the banks, we should have handed trillions of dollars to homeowners, let them pay off the banks. It would have actually cost us less, and it would have helped the economy more, and we wouldn't have this horrible economy. But homeowners don't have a lobbyist in Washington, D.C., and the banks sure do. There's a piece in the New York Times today about it that's absolutely, you know, that'll lift the hair off the back of your neck.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
With that said, Eric, I think you're spot on, and thank you for the call. We'll be back with more Anything Goes Friday. Welcome back. 34 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. And Anything Goes Friday. Andrew in Portland, Oregon. Hey, Andrew, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. I want to talk a little bit about Senator Elizabeth Warren's Bank on Student Loans Fairness Act.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to urge people to get out there and call their senators, and if they're not co-sponsoring the bill, find out why and get them to co-sponsor them. Because, you know, student loan debt has passed $1 trillion, and it's surpassed outpaced credit card debt and auto debt, and it's strapping young people like myself, and it's making it hard for us to get started and help rebuild the economy.
Yeah.
So I feel like it's very important.
I agree. And in fact, I would go beyond that. I think that we need to have a jubilee of forgiveness of all student loan debt in the United States. We should say that was a mistake we should never have made. We've got $1 trillion for the student loan debt. $1 trillion is an amount of money that the federal government can come up with and can come up with fairly easily. I mean, George Bush came up with $1.5 trillion, $2 trillion for his war in Iraq, came up with another couple $1 trillion. It's going to be 3 or 4 by the time we're done for his war in Afghanistan. And I mean, you know, let's come up with $1 trillion, pay off all the student debt and say, you know, investing in our students is no different than investing in our roads or hospitals or schools or anything else. It is the educational infrastructure. It is our future, quite literally. And from now on, education, you know, post-secondary education is going to be completely free in the United States. We could negotiate perhaps some little give back, like, you know, if you're going to go to medical school, maybe you serve underserved areas or something like that in exchange for free tuition. Or if you're going to get a full 4-year college education, then, you know, give a year back to your country in the form of working in nonprofits or joining the military for a year. But whatever, however we do it, that we should just end this whole idea that people should have to pay money to go to school. It's crazy. So Andrew, thank you for the call. But like I say, I would go even a step further. I would declare all the student debt null and void. And I mean, this was Abe Lincoln's idea. This was Thomas Jefferson's idea. Thomas Jefferson started the University of Virginia as the first free college in America. Anybody could attend, regardless of their income. And Abe Lincoln, you know, the land grant colleges give away hundreds of thousands, maybe hundreds of, maybe millions. I you know, it had to be millions, because there's a whole bunch of these land-grant colleges across the United States. But there's more colleges than there are states. And he gave them a large enough chunk of land that they could work the land and use the land to make the money to run the college so that they could give away educations for free. Stephen in New York City, listening on WWRL. Hey, Stephen, what's up?
Hi, Tom. How are you? I always learn so much when I listen to your program.
Thank you.
I wanted to ask about the line item veto, but I became very interested in this animus thing that you just brought up.
Well, we can talk about both. I'll tell you, I don't know if your question is when, you know, what's the status of the line item veto. I think that the line item veto has been declared unconstitutional by the United States Supreme Court. Shane is nodding his head. Do you know when that happened, Shano? In the 90s? Yeah, okay. And so, you know,
but they used it a lot.
Yeah, it what it does is it gives more power. The Supreme Court's rationale was that by being able to pick and choose pieces of legislation, the president has basically a legislative authority, and that's not an authority that's granted to in Article 2 of the Constitution that is granted to the executive branch. That's only granted to the legislative branch. And I agree with that. The easy solution is for the president to start saying, I'm not going to sign any legislation that comes to me in this omnibus form, in these aggregate forms.
The writers makes the legislation different. You know, you're trying to create legislation to perform a task, and then everybody throws all of this extra crap in the legislation. You should be able to eliminate the pork.
But it needs to be done by Congress. It shouldn't be to have the president do it. I actually agree with the Supreme Court. It was a 1998 decision on that. But animism, what caught your attention on animism?
Oh, I for years have people have asked me, and I've spoken to religious people that feel that religious being religious. What do I think God is? I think that God is all that is. And I never really had a name for it or understood anybody else to feel something similar. And when you just described it, you know, the way the Indians used to touch the tree or you used to touch the tree and feel that it was a part of God, I look at everything that way.
Yeah.
And I think that if everybody felt that when they interact with other people, that they are looking at another form of themselves or God, that they were respected more.
Yeah.
Instead of looking at everything around them as being subordinate.
My spiritual mentor, Gottfried Mueller, I wrote a book about him called The Prophet's Way, and he's the guy that got Louise and I, inspired Louise and I to start the Community for Abused Kids up in New Hampshire. And he said, when you look into the eyes of another person, or when you look into the eyes of a dog or cat, or when you look into the eyes of an insect, looking back at you is all the intelligence of the universe. God is looking back at you. And right. and I remember one day we were walking along this path, which he called the Prophet's Way, this trail through the woods in Germany. And he was touching the leaves of the plants as we went along and talking to them. And he stopped with this one bush that had some flowers, and he held this leaf up to me and he said, "This plant follows the sun. As the sun arcs across the sky, this plant moves its leaves to follow the sun." He said, "I can't see the eyes of this plant," you know, because he had been talking about God looking back at you through the eyes of every living thing. He said, "I can't see the eyes, but they're there, and God is here too," you know. And I got it after he died that this was kind of a variation on animism. His Christian, because he called himself a Christian, his Christian perspective on animism. Although he also his mentor was a fellow by the name of Avram Poyak, who was a Hasidic Jew, and he kept Sabbath and he did all. It was just an amazing story. Anyhow, Stephen, thank you for the call. Let's get some more calls in here. It's Anything Goes Friday. Brian in Mount Pleasant, South Carolina, you disagree with my idea that we should pay off student loans?
Well, no, I think it's a great idea because I took on some credit card debt, significant credit card debt, before the recession, and I thought I was going to be able to pay that off, and I was hoping I could get the government to pay off that too.
Yeah, but your credit card debt is not an investment in the future of America. It was probably beer and pizza. And that is not the commons. That's not the future of this country. Education is the commons and is the future of the country. And that's why I agree with Thomas Jefferson and Abraham Lincoln and numerous other presidents and legislatures over the years that education in the United States should be free.
Am I here?
Yeah, you're still in here.
I didn't put that on beer and pizza. I did it on all sorts of things. I spent it on all kinds of stuff.
And yeah, my point.
I think at the end of the day, but a lot of it was, things for me.
But that's not the future of this country. Putting money on your credit card bill and saying that that's the same thing, saying that there's a moral equivalence between our country saying we should simply, pay off everybody's credit card tab versus we should have a debt jubilee, we should pay off everybody's student loans. They're completely different things. Education, after World War II, my father's generation came back. My dad went to college on the GI Bill, and my wife's father went to college on the GI Bill. And my dad didn't finish college. He dropped out because my mom got pregnant with me, and he went to work in a steel mill that ultimately is what killed him from asbestos, mesothelioma. But Louise's dad got all the way to his JD. He got a law degree. He was the first one in his family ever to have a college degree. And he got a law degree, and he was the assistant attorney general for the state of Michigan. He worked his way all the way up to that because the federal government under Dwight Eisenhower said, you served in World War II. It was actually a little bit after the war, but you served during that era, or you volunteered for service during World War II is what happened with both our fathers. And therefore, you are going to get a free college education. And in fact, they both got stipends to go to college in addition to the free college education. And what we did with that GI Bill by providing free college education is we went from around 6 or 7% college graduates in the United States to in the teens. I think it was 16 or 18% by the time the GI Bill had pretty much petered out by the end of the 50s and early 60s. And that then caused America in the 50s, 60s, and 70s to be the leader in innovation in the world. We invented the transistor. We invented the integrated circuit. We invented the computer. We invented all these things because we educated a generation of Americans. And then Reagan came along and said, "Oh no, that's terrible." You know, he used to have free college education in California for a long, 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 long time. And then Ronald Reagan came along as governor and said, "Why should I pay for the education of kids who are protesting against me?" And he killed it. And then at the federal level, when he became president, he started killing education, free education all across this country. And so for 33 years now of Reaganomics, it's gotten more and more and more expensive. When Reagan came into office, college tuition, about 80% of college tuition was covered by the colleges or by state or federal governments. Now it's around 20%. So college is much more expensive. And so what's happening? Instead of us creating engineers and leading the world in innovation. India is now creating engineers and leading the world in innovation. Instead of us being, you know, the high-tech capital of the world, China is becoming the high-tech capital of the world because they're investing in their students and we're not. So, you know, I have heard this before from conservatives. Oh, yeah, you want students to go to college for free. Pay for my credit card. Pay for my beer and pizza. Pay for my rent, whatever. No, I'm sorry. They're completely different things.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And this is really the thing that is so sad about this conservative worldview is that there's no... Let's not invest in the future at all. To hell with the future. Really? 10 minutes before the hour, let's check in with Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service, TalkRadioNews.com. Find out what's going on in the world. Is brought to you, by the way, by GoatsForTheOldGoat.com, and where you can give a goat to help a rescued slave and get a photo of your goat and the person you helped. Hey, Victoria.
Hey, Tom.
So what's going on in the world today?
President Obama gave the commencement address at the Naval Academy today, and he addressed the issue of sexual assault in the military, urging graduates to follow an inner compass, and was really quite strong on this. We need your honor, that inner compass that guides you, he said, even more than physical courage. We need your moral courage, the strength to do what's right, even when it's unpopular. And he also praised the military as the nation's most trusted institution. And when he talked about the cases where service members have been charged with sexual assault, he said the people threaten the trust and discipline which makes our military strong. He also talked about how interesting. He said, we've seen how the misconduct of some can have effects that ripple far and wide. Again, he was talking about the same issue. But he said, as battlefield photos of troops falling short on their standards can go viral and endanger our forces. And I thought that it was interesting that he picked that one. So those who commit sexual assault are not only committing a crime, they threaten the trust and discipline that makes our military strong. That's why we have to be determined to stop these crimes, because they've got no place in the greatest military on earth.
Hmm. And was he well-received? I'm assuming
he was very well-received. He's spoken there before. He was welcomed with enthusiastic cheers, according to the New York Times.
Yeah. Good, good.
One story that you may see reported by some outlets is that as he was entering Marine One, he did not salute the Marine. A great deal is being made about this, how he didn't salute a Marine. What he did do actually was turn around, shake hands with the Marine, and have a conversation with him.
And the conservatives are criticizing him for this?
They're criticizing him for not saluting the Marine. But it seems to me that if you turn around, shake somebody's hand, and have a conversation with them,
that's a little higher on the pecking order of or whatever. You know, that's a little better.
Seems to me.
Yeah, I'd rather have him have a conversation with me than salute me. I mean,
if I was standing there all day, I'd think it was kind of interesting.
I would guess, though, that those right wingers who are going hysterical about he didn't salute, that's where their sentence ends.
Yes, and it was raining too, and I don't think he had an umbrella. I think he's the same as the umbrella people.
Ah, okay.
Also, very interesting. New York Times reporting, turns out, as you know, Dodd-Frank was passed in the wake of the financial meltdown of a few years ago to sort of write things and try to make sure that we don't have another one, and regulations had to be written. Well, Wall Street, not content to sit back and let those regulations be written by lawmakers, decided to get in and help. And the New York Times has written about this deal book. One bill that sailed through the House Financial Services Committee just this month, this was over the objections of the Treasury Department, was basically a bill by Citigroup. Citigroup's recommendations were reflected in more than 70 lines of the House Committee's 85-line bill. And in fact, two crucial paragraphs prepared by Citigroup in conjunction with other Wall Street banks were copied nearly word for word.
Yeah, I read the article this is a bipartisan problem.
Yes, it's a bipartisan problem, and particularly with freshmen.
Yeah, yeah, a bunch of Democratic freshmen, Republican freshmen, obviously, but a bunch of the Democratic freshmen being wined and dined by the banksters, And this is, you know, the Supreme Court has done so much damage to this country with this doctrine that corporations are people and money is speech, and therefore they can just buy any member of Congress they want. They've just done so much damage.
Very, very disturbing. Also today, a spokesman for the Russian Foreign Ministry said that the Syrian government has agreed to participate in an international peace conference coordinated by Russia and the United States.
That's interesting.
Yes, but even as Sergei Lukashevich said the Syrian government had committed to participating in the talks, he cited complicating factors that were undermining some efforts to broker an end to the violence. He said that there were steps being taken at the UN and in Geneva and in New York that were counterproductive. So nothing is ever simple. Meanwhile, you've got Syria's main political opposition group responding to this announcement, saying, well, there aren't any signs that the government's really willing to produce a peaceful political solution. So I think when we actually see everybody in the same room, we can say that there is going to be a peace conference. There is a new poll out, the ABC Washington Post poll, asking people whether sequestration has harmed them and how it's affecting them. Back in March, only 25% of Americans said it had affected them. Poll out today said the numbers jumped to 37%, with half of the people saying the impact was major.
Wow. And I understand that this is starting to affect Republican voters.
Yes, even Tea Party people. In fact, 66% of Tea Party people who report personal harm from the sequester oppose the cuts.
Wow. Is the John Boehner's statement after he got the sequester passed saying, hey, I'm a pretty happy guy, I got 95% of what I wanted, or what, 98%? I think it was 95%. Has that gone viral in the Tea Party community too, or are they blaming the sequester on Obama? Or was that not part of the survey?
Blaming the sequester on President Obama.
Yeah, okay. All right.
Yeah, I think so. Senator Chuck Schumer is warning, in a letter to federal regulators today that allowing a Japanese company called SoftBank to buy Sprint could really expose critical communications networks to hackers. What he's worried about is that the deal could help the Chinese government spy on private communications of U.S. companies and people because they have a connection with China.
Wow.
And he's very worried about this. John McCain raised similar letters in concerns in a letter yesterday.
Wow. Wow. And I mean, is there a probability that SoftBank, that this Japanese company, is going to buy Sprint?
There's a very good possibility. This could happen. It's not definitely. It could happen.
Wow. Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News. Thank you, Victoria.
Thank you.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Anything Goes Friday. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And the president's speech yesterday. We'll talk about that. The Congressional Budget Office says we need a new price on carbon emissions. Where'd my newscast go? Ah, here we are right here. The Chicago yesterday closed 50 schools in less than 90 seconds. This is causing some consternation in the Windy City. CBO and carbon. Oh, another, the Lois Lerner has, gone on administrative leave. Chuck Grassley says she was asked to resign, but she refused. But I don't know that I always take everything Chuck Grassley says at face value. So, oh, and the mayor of Toronto says, well, actually, he doesn't say he wasn't, it wasn't him smoking that crack pipe with those drug dealers on that video. He's like dodging reporters. So, I mean, he needs, you know, maybe he should call up Marion Barry and have a, you know, got any suggestions? But those were different times, I suppose. Mike in Bellingham, Washington, listening on KBAI. Hey, Mike, that bridge that collapsed is near you?
Yeah, it is, Tom. We're about 35 miles north of the Mount Vernon bridge that collapsed.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out that there was an oversized load or truck. And what I'm calling about, I just heard a short time ago on your program of apparently a bill that they're trying to push through in Congress that would expand the size of trucks.
Right.
And we had here in Whatcom County, which is north of Mount Vernon, a bridge that last fall, and this bridge crosses the Nooksack River. It's just off of I-5, and it was shut down for months to be repaired because it was struck by a truck with an oversized load and shut down. And then that was for westbound traffic. And a couple of years ago, the same bridge was shut down when it was weakened and pretty close to collapse by a westbound truck that was carrying an oversized load. And it's the size of these trucks that I think is playing such a major factor in this.
Well, you could argue it's the size of the trucks, as a caller earlier did who is a trucker. Or you could argue, and I'm relatively agnostic on this because I'm just not all that well informed about it. I defer to the wisdom of truckers on trucks. But it seems logical that the alternative argument would be to say that up until the 1980s, we were continually upgrading our national infrastructure to be state-of-the-art, basically. And so, you know, as cars got to go faster, our highways straightened out, and we went from rural roads to interstate highways, and our rail system, you know, from the 1800s to the 1900s got better and better, and our air traffic control system got better and better, and our airplanes got better and better. And then, you know, Reagan came along and said, it's not the job of government to do anything except, you know, have Star Wars. And we basically haven't maintained or improved our infrastructure since then. And had we been doing infrastructure at the rate we were doing it in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, under basically the administrations of the Republican administration of Dwight Eisenhower and Richard Nixon and the Democratic administrations of Lyndon Johnson and Jack Kennedy and Jimmy Carter, had we been doing that since the Reagan administration, our bridges right now would be able to handle larger trucks, and our roads would be able to handle larger trucks. And I mean, there's even new pavement technologies and stuff that we're not doing. It's like we're just not doing anything anymore. Because
it seems to me, Tom, every effort that the Democrats have made to try and do infrastructure work has been blocked by the Republicans.
Yep.
And it's terribly frustrating to see that. And you know, then to hear them, as they are, were this morning, blaming Democrats for not fixing them when they blocked it every step of the way.
Yeah.
Any infrastructure.
Well, the Republicans, for the Republicans, it's a twofer. I mean, you know, it's on the one hand, they one of the reasons why so much of this infrastructure isn't being repaired is because tax collections are down. I mean, you know, Reagan dropped the tax on rich people from 74% down to 28%, and then we've seen corporate revenues, corporations pay the effective tax rate that's paid by American corporations go from pre-Reagan in the 40% range to right now in the 16-17% range. We're the second lowest in the industrialized world. And this isn't the actual tax rate that is supposed to be paid, but it's the amount that actually is paid as a consequence of all these loopholes. So on the one hand, the Republicans, you know, the rich people and the corporations, they don't pay so much taxes. And then on the other hand, as our infrastructure crumbles as a consequence of that, now they're coming forward and they're saying, oh, look at the water system for this town is falling apart. Let's sell it to a billionaire. Oh, look at the sewage system for this town is falling apart. Let's sell it off to a transnational corporation. Oh, look at the highways aren't working. Let's have an Australian company. I mean, literally an Australian company come in and build a toll road for us. And so they get to privatize the commons. It's this slow, creeping, gradual replacement of government of, by, and for we the people, where we get to make our decisions and we get to have, you know, the country that we want, have that replaced by transnational corporations and billionaires, you know, organizations that don't basically care about America. We're just, you know, a way for them to get what they want. So, Mike, I'm with you. Thank you for the call. Well said. Laura in Chicago, listening to WCPT. Hey, Laura, what's up?
Hey, Tom, hi. I wanted to call in with an update on the fracking issue here in Illinois.
Okay.
We have been having some fun here. Josh Fox had his premiere of Gasland 2 in Normal, Illinois on Monday night.
Mm-hmm.
Packed house. It was great. It's a great film. You mm-hmm. got to see it.
Okay.
It'll come out on HBO soon.
Great.
And then
we'll get Josh on the program.
Sandberg. Oh, yeah. Have you this week? Did you have
him? Oh, he was when Gasland when originally came out, he was on this show a couple of times talking about it. And we had him on the TV show and we played clips from it and we promoted it pretty heavily. And so if he's got a new one out, he's got an open door here. He knows it. So
it's great. It's a great film, too. Mm-hmm. And Sandra Steingraber was there as well, who is the author of Raising Elijah.
Mm-hmm.
And then we all went into Springfield, and we had a rip-roaring good time at a committee hearing about the lousy regulatory bill here in Illinois. And then really every day since and through the Memorial Day weekend, we're going to be in Springfield and we're going to be protesting. There's been sit-ins, a couple arrests, not too many, mostly peaceful. And we're just really putting pressure on the Illinois House not to pass a really lousy regulatory bill with these huge holes in it for the industry to do whatever they want and go for a moratorium on fracking like they have in New York.
Yeah, yeah. Good idea. Well, Laura, is there a website that we can direct people to?
Absolutely. Don'tfractureillinois.net and Stop the Frack Attack on Illinois on Facebook. Stop the Frack Attack on Illinois on Facebook. We keep that one updated really, really well. And if people want to come down to Springfield, if Illinoisans, want to come back down to Springfield on Sunday and Monday, they can drop me a note on Stop the Frack Attack on Illinois on Facebook, and we can gather. We're going to be down there. I think the House comes in session at 3 p.m. on Sunday and at noon on Monday.
Is the main...
So it'll be a...
Go ahead.
It'll be a very memorable Memorial Day weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. Is the main legislative message, is it water pollution? Is it air pollution? Is it, what's the main message that seems to be grabbing politicians very quickly?
Yeah, it's definitely water contamination.
Yeah.
And also air pollution, because that's what sickens people. It's very serious.
There you go. Laura in Chicago. Thank you, Laura. Appreciate the call. We'll be back 15 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
It's Anything Goes Friday here on the Tom Hartman Program. Your calls, my thoughts, the news of the day. We'll kick it all around. Tom Hartman here, we're back with you, occupying the media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week, exposing the con and conservative. Dusty in Clinton Township, Michigan. Hey, Dusty, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Just wanted to make a comment on two things I learned from you.
Mm-hmm.
You let us know that the Koch brothers are dumping the bitumen waste, sludge, solid waste, from the pipeline or from Canada along the Detroit River.
Yeah, from the waste left over after the coal sands slurry has been refined into petroleum products. The waste that's left over, they've got this city block, high pile of it that it's constantly moving because they're putting it on ships and or trains or however they do it and getting it off to China and other countries that will burn it, but it's illegal to burn it in the United States because it's so dirty.
But it's toxic and flammable.
Yes.
I grew up in inner city Detroit. Am I the only person that thinks it was a bad idea to put that stuff in Detroit, which is known worldwide as the city that burns things down on Devil's Night? They start fires and burn buildings to the, ground.
You're right. That hadn't occurred to me. I think it's a bad idea to put it there, period. And Reverend Bullock was pointing out that these waste sites are almost always cited in poor communities and typically African-American communities. Same thing with Cancer Alley, you know, from Texas to Louisiana, the downwind from the Koch brothers and other companies' refineries down in the South. This is a Koch brothers refinery in Michigan, and so that's why it's ending up there. And, you know,
at the same time, we've cut back our fire department and police.
Yep.
The other thing, and it's a little off subject, you're talking about animism, which I found fascinating. I always check the Jewish box on my papers, but the more I see of science and astronomy, all the stuff they've got on TV about the wonders of the universe, the more I've come to believe that the visible universe is the brain of God.
Mm-hmm.
And it changes my perspective on things.
Yeah, I think you're right. And actually, you know, the universe has been expanding and it's been growing in complexity. And, I mean, for 15 billion years, but it's like they're measuring it. There was an interesting article about it, and I think it was in Science in the journal AAAS recently. And it caused me to think, you know, what if the consciousness of the universe, if we're like, you know, a pond reflecting the light of the moon, you know, we're just reflecting the consciousness of the universe, or little bits of it are passing through us. And as the universe becomes more complex, if it is a brain, I mean, if it is literally a living organism, the entire universe, and a conscious organism, and it's becoming more complex, it's becoming more sophisticated, it's becoming smarter, maybe that's why we're becoming smarter. That's why humans are, even though our species has not genetically differentiated in 165,000 years, we're pretty much the same as we were then. Over that period of time, we've gotten, you know, more and more and more conscious and more and more and more intelligent. I wonder if that has something to do with the universe getting more complex. Now, I realize that's probably way out there, but, you know, it's a cool idea.
Can you prove it or destroy it? I'm wondering if the Koch brothers' little pile of mess goes into the river or the land or someone sets fire to it, what is that going to do to our agriculture up here? And we have some. And our river.
Well, it'll do more to New York State because the prevailing winds. I grew up in Michigan. Prevailing winds are out of the west, so they would carry the you know, it would go up in soot and in, you know, the flames, and just like burning coal, and that would carry it out over New York State and the eastern seaboard. But it would be a bad thing. It would absolutely be a bad thing. Dusty, thanks for the call and thanks for watching Free Speech TV. John in Albuquerque, listening on KBQ. Hey, John, what's up?
Hi, John, Tom. Just three quick points. One, you talked about universities being subsidized by 20% in the U.S.
Yeah.
Versus 80% in the past.
Yeah, before Reagan.
I looked up the Indian Institutes of Technology on the web, and they're being subsidized at 80% this year.
Surprise! Now, I mean, it's like everybody in the world looks at us and says, okay, how did the United States do it in the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s? You know, how did they build this, you know, the biggest middle class, the biggest industrial empire the world has ever seen? How did they do it? Well, we had tariffs that averaged around 30%. We had a top tax rate of 74%. We had corporations actually paying their taxes. We protected our domestic industries. I mean, just really, really simple stuff. And all around the world, what are these countries doing? They're doing what we used to do.
Exactly.
Anyway.
Then I think I've coined a new term, and let me call it civicide, or the death of a civilization.
Civicide.
Committing the murder of a civilization.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what the oil companies and the Republicans are doing to us today.
Yeah, I would not disagree with that. That's
and finally,
yeah. Go ahead.
Finally, you know, you talk about infrastructure and the disinvestment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, every year, the American Society of Civil Engineers gives us a grade on our infrastructure.
Yeah, we're down to a D now, aren't we?
D or D minus.
Yeah, yeah. And
have another bridge fall down, and that's going to lower our grade.
Yeah. No, we're $2 trillion in the hole since Reagan stopped putting money into the, and, you know, cut off the supply of money to do so into our infrastructure. And it's just killing the United States. John, thanks for the call. Greg in McKeesport, Pennsylvania. You want to talk about the IRS investigation?
Yeah, Tom, when you think about the Tea Party and how they come out against social welfare, calling the 47% of people who have social welfare as the takers, I thought it was kind of appropriate that the IRS would single them out.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I think the IRS was just doing their job. And if your stated goal is to, you know, dismantle government or to get more tax breaks for billionaires, I don't see that as a social welfare project, frankly. And no matter how much they want to protest that they're all about social welfare, I agree with you. I think Mike Papatonio said it really well last night. They were just doing their job. And the president should be supporting them, frankly, although, you know, we all know how politics works in this country. Greg, thanks for the call. We'll be back with more of your thoughts, my thoughts, the news of the day on Anything Goes Friday. 27 minutes past the hour here on the Tom Hartman Program. TomHartman.com, by the way. Drop into our free live chat room and say hi.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
We also have a free newsletter that you can subscribe to, and we do a podcast. They charge for those. You can see the program, live stream, all kinds of cool stuff. 33 minutes past the hour. Welcome back to Anything Goes Friday here on the Tom Hartman Program. I got to share this one with you. Congressman Stephen Fincher. This is, he's on the House Agricultural Committee. This guy got $3.5 million in federal farm subsidies. There's a great graphic of this over at Democratic Underground. It was he's a Republican from Tennessee, by the way. It was posted by Mojo Working, and most disgusting member of Congress. He's raked in $3.5 million in federal farm subsidies. Right? He's got a farm. He calls himself a quote successful businessman because the federal government gave him $3.5 million. And here's where it gets amazing. During this is from Forbes magazine. During a recent House Agriculture Committee debate over the farm bill, which contains the food stamp budget, Vargas, this is another member of Congress, cited the book of Matthew. This was a Democrat. He's talking, he's quoting from the book of Matthew. Matthew 25, actually, one of the things I regularly rant about. And he said, you know, says the book of Matthew says how you treat the least among us, the least of our brothers, that's how you treat him being, you know, the Lord. Vargas also noted that Jesus directly mentions the importance of feeding the hungry. Not to be outdone, from Forbes magazine, not to be outdone by a godless Democrat, Congressman Fincher, this is the Republican from Tennessee, who took $3.5 million in federal ag subsidies for his farm. Representative Fincher, not to be outdone by a godless Democrat, Congressman Fincher responded with his own Bible quote taken from the book of Thessalonians, "The one who is unwilling to work shall not eat." Representative Fincher happens to be the second largest recipient of farm subsidies in the United States Congress. And this might explain, Forbes writes, why Mr. Fincher would like to decimate the food stamp budget in order to do the Lord's work when, quote, supporting a proposal to expand crop insurance by $9 billion over the next 10 years. More money for wealthy farmers, less money for food stamps. In fact, he calls people on food stamps. He says that they are, quote, stealing other people's money, end quote. This is also part of the farm bill, right? Food stamps. Food stamps and his subsidies all together. So this graphic, the Fincher philosophy, Congressman Fincher from Tennessee. If you're watching or listening in Tennessee, call his office and say hi and let him know what you think. Tax dollars for him are good. Tax dollars for you, if you happen to be getting food stamps, bad. That's stealing. Kirk in Bothell, Washington, listening on KBCS 91.3 FM. Hey, Kirk, what's up?
I'm feeling like a very lucky man today. Both of my high school kids went over that bridge last night on a bus en route to a band festival up in Vancouver, B.C., about an hour before the collapse.
Whoa.
And so, yeah. To me, that bridge collapse really symbolizes what you've described as the metastasizing level of cancer. And, you know, with corporations like Boeing, Microsoft, and Amazon directly feeling the pain of that artery being severed for quite a while now, I'm hoping that maybe the greedy bastards will finally figure out that they're poisoning themselves.
Yeah, well, we'll see. I suspect that ain't going to happen, but Your point is well made, Kirk, and thank you very much. Bob in Clifton, Tennessee. Hey, Bob, what's up?
You made me blanch with the report on Fisher in Tennessee.
Yeah, Fincher. Yeah.
Fincher, shame on him.
It's bizarre.
Tom, I wanted to talk to you about the Keystone Extreme Tar Sands Pipeline.
Mm-hmm.
The last time I got my telephone bill from Credo, they reported that 51,000 people had signed a pledge to commit civil disobedience, including arrest, in case the pipeline is approved. And then the Nation this last week reported that the number was up to 59,000 people who have pledged to commit civil disobedience if the Keystone Extreme Tar Sands Pipeline is approved.
Wow.
So I'm very happy about that. And I called you several months ago, and I'd like to ask you, have you switched your telephone service to Credo yet?
I haven't.
Or are you with Verizon, who is not. Union?
I don't have a landline phone. I just have a cell phone, and I bought an iPhone, so I got trapped in one of these AT&T contracts, which I think is, frankly, a violation of the antitrust laws. In Europe, if you get an iPhone or any other kind of phone, any other kind of smartphone, you can choose from dozens, I mean, it depends on the country, dozens to hundreds of carriers, and you can swap, you can change them from day to day, you know, with no penalty or fine or fee. You just buy a new SIM card. Here in the United States, you get locked into these two-year contracts, and then every time your phone breaks, and my phone right now has a cracked screen, so I got to go in and replace the phone. When I replace the phone, that'll, in all probability, be considered a brand-new purchase of a brand-new phone, and I got a whole brand-new two-year contract. I think it's crazy business practices. Well, it's not crazy. It's crazy like a fox from the point of view of Apple and AT&T, but it is not the way that I think business should be done in the United States. But Bob, thanks for the heads up on that, and a good plug for Credo. It's a great organization, and for people who do have copper lines, do have landlines, a great place to start. Sanchez in Long Beach, California. Hey, Sanchez, what's up?
Good day to you, Senor Hartman. As a matter of fact, I am speaking to you on a landline.
Uh-huh.
It's crucial to have a landline in earthquake-prone Southern California, because if there is a power blackout, cell phones will be affected. There will be no communications, as it occurred in Hurricane Sandy. So
you're right. You're right.
Yeah, I understand why you're trapped into a cell phone line, but, you know, I'm so glad I kept mine. But anyway, that's not why I called.
Uh-huh.
You were earlier mentioning when Senator Sanders was on, and you had a caller come in from Occupy Davis, and they were mentioning Monsanto. And yesterday with the Senate vote, I'm completely floored why Elizabeth Warren, Senator Elizabeth Warren, voted it down, as well as Al Franken. Senor, I just went to their websites. They offer no information as to why they voted no on this thing. So, would you happen to know me? I'd pick your brain up.
I don't know. I have not had that conversation with them, and I would be, I think it would be inappropriate for me to represent their perspective when I don't have a clue. I just don't. And in fact, I didn't even know that that was the case. So, and I still don't know that that's the case, although I'll take you at your word, Sanchez. Steve in River Forest, Illinois. Hey, Steve, what's up?
Hey, Tom, I was just wondering if you've ever heard of the mathematician Donald Sari, S-A-A-R-I, who advocates for board account voting, which is very similar to instant runoff voting, the system of ranked voting where you rank your candidates in order of preference and your vote transfers. But in board account, if there's three candidates, every time a candidate appears in the first position, they get 3 points. Every time they appear in the second position, they get 2 points. And every time they appear in the first position, they get 1 point. And then the points are all added up. And this guy, Donald G. Sari, who has videos on YouTube and a book out called Chaotic Voting, thinks that board account is a little bit better than instant runoff.
Yeah, that's ranked voting, where you're actually applying a number to the rank. Is it B-O-R-D-A count? Is that how it's spelled?
Yeah, Borda. It's after a French mathematician.
Right.
And it can be gamed like any other kind of voting, but of course, like instant runoff, it prevents a split, which is really critical.
Right, and it opens up the possibility of multiple political parties.
And
that's really where we need to get in this country. But you know, we're not there yet, so we've got to push the ones that we have. But I'm not familiar with it. But I would, Donald. Sorry, I will. Now you've sensitized me. Probably we will be doing shows about it in the next couple of months. Steve, thanks for the call.
Sure.
Thanks for listening to WCPT. Steven in Burbank, California. Hey, Steven.
Hi, Tom.
Carbon tax.
It's great hearing from Bob and Sanchez.
Yeah.
I called about the carbon tax.
Uh-huh.
And what I see is the lawyers and the accountants, you know, fudging the numbers. You know, they just put down any numbers they want to, then it goes to court, and nothing gets solved. The major corporations continue to burn as much fossil fuel as they want to. Mm. And it also opens the door for the big fish to swallow up the smaller fish.
Yeah.
Thereby eliminating the possibility of the entrepreneurs, you know, getting their foot in the door to, get into the magic of the marketplace.
Yeah. And all of this you can track back to the Supreme Court saying, oh, billionaires and corporations, they ought to be able to buy politicians and then get the laws they want, get the regulations they want, and get and play the game on the playing field that they've established for themselves. Excellent point, Stephen. Thank you for that. Fran in Fair Oaks, California. Just a minute to the break. Fran, what's up?
Yes, hi, Tom. So I was wondering if you've heard anything about the short-term impact of when we voted in that tax in California on the above 250 in the sales tax. If we've got companies running for the borders or laying off people or...
No, I understand that California has reduced their deficit and then so the standard of living continues to rise and things are doing well, is my understanding.
Yeah, my question...
I mean, you live there.
Yeah, I'm saying as far as all the naysayers, when I voted for this, they were all saying, if we vote for this, all the companies are going to head out of state and go to a different state.
Yeah, no, they're not going to do that because they wouldn't have the, what, are they going to move to Texas where they don't have schools that are as good and their employees don't want to go there and their engineers don't want to go there and stuff? No, it's not going to happen. Fran, thanks for the call. I mean, this infrastructure drives business.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
A good infrastructure, a good culture, a good livable city, that's the soil in which businesses grow. Hey, thanks so much to our show director, Louise Hartman, to my executive producer, Sean Taylor, our associate producers, Shane Farnan and Danielle Gilday, to our video director, Jim Javinsky, to our writer researchers, Andrew Campbell and Nate Sweet, to Alva Goldberg for video production, to our webmasters, Nigel Peacock and Jamie Holly, to our business manager, Ron Hartenbaum, all of the people at the various companies that syndicate this program, Dial Global, Pacifica Radio, Sirius XM Satellite Radio, CRN Network, Free Speech TV, Dish Network, DirecTV, all the cable providers who carry our show, and Comcast, Manhattan Neighborhood Network, all the others around the country, the great folks at Free Speech TV and RTTV who work on the big picture, to our newsletter editor, Sue Nethercutt, to the folks in our chat room, hey, to Ellen Ratner, Victoria Jones, and everyone at the Talk Radio News Service, Jay Tamboli, Jay Goodman Tamboli for tech support, to our affiliates, our sponsors, and thanks to you for supporting our program. You know, when you call our sponsors or our underwriters or our stations or our networks and say thank you for the show, it means a lot. They very rarely hear from anybody. when they do, I hear about it. It's great. Adam Eidinger is with us. He is the spokesperson for Occupy Monsanto. The website is occupy-monsanto.com. And Adam, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
So you got a gig going on tomorrow.
Well, it's not just our gig. This is a decentralized movement. In fact, mm-hmm. Our group didn't even initiate the call for these protests. There were activists out in Seattle who said, you know what, let's do this next month. It was like about a month ago.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, really, there's just so much momentum around the food issue in this country. People are really fed up with the lack of choice, the lack of transparency, the lies, the political control that Monsanto has been spewing. And they really have some control of the media now. If you listen to National Public Radio, you will regularly hear promotions for Monsanto. And if you look at CNN and MSNBC and Fox, they're all receiving large advertising budgets from all the biotech companies. And then you look at the campaign contributions, and if these companies, they might boast giving away a couple hundred thousand dollars in scholarships in rural communities, and meanwhile they'll turn around and spend, you know, $40 million plus to defeat GMO labeling in the state of California last year.
Right. And let me interject here. For the actual march against Monsanto, which is happening over this weekend, it's march-against-monsanto.com.
That's right.
Back to you, Adam.
That's correct. That is the main hub website, although there are a network of anti-Monsanto groups, Millions Against Monsanto, with the Organic Consumers Association comes to mind. And Dave, we've been networking for years now, taking on this company. I've actually spoken at the shareholder meeting the last 2 years. Very few voices are...
That's occupying Monsanto.
That's occupying Monsanto.
Yeah.
And so anyway, we're sponsoring a number of demonstrations around, and including one at the White House tomorrow. We're going to be out there with large numbers of people, we hope. And we're going to be marching to the Monsanto offices here, their lobbying offices.
Here being in D.C.?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. And okay. So people can learn all about this at occupy-monsanto.com?
That's right. And, we encourage people to come on out and bring their creativity. We've encouraged people to bring shopping carts
because
we're shopping for truth. And
it's a great metaphor.
Yeah, well, we want transparency, and this issue does sort of bring together people of different political stripes, as you noted earlier.
Yep.
And there are a lot of different causes out there that are getting people out in the streets.
Yeah.
Turns out that, you know, a lot of conservatives do care about transparency. They think that the market can't function properly if companies can get away with not disclosing novel genes that are inserted into these plants.
Yeah.
They are different than regular food. They have patents. They're totally unique and man-made. And people who maybe have allergies should have a right to know what's in their food. So we're pretty much all united on that issue. And even some of the people who oppose tough government regulation believe that there should still be truth in labeling.
Yeah, you know? I'm totally with you. Adam Eidinger, the website is occupy-monsanto.com. And, of course, march-against-monsanto.com. Adam, thanks a lot for being with us.
Thanks for having me on the show.
Keep up the great work, and good luck tomorrow. Boy, it's going to be a big day. Sarah in Honolulu, Hawaii, listening on WCPT's stream.
Yes, our Monsanto march is down around Waikiki Beach area, and it's Montserrat Street at Kalakaua.
Great.
And it's between 10:30 and... noon is when it's going to really form up.
Okay.
But that's not the reason I called. I called to ask why the Democrats do not let the, you know, push through a good jobs bill and let the Republicans come out and tell why they won't pass it.
Well, in the House of Representatives, they can't do that because the ability to even present a bill is controlled by John Boehner and Eric Cantor, and they will not allow Democrats to present bills, legislation. In the Senate, the things have to come out of committees. There have been a number of actually good jobs bills that have been proposed by Democrats that have come out of various committees over the last year or two. The thing is, the media completely ignores it. It's just, you know, there's some of them have even, you know, made it to the floor, and then the Republicans just do a filibuster. So they've been trying. I think that the Democrats, if your real question is why don't the Democrats do better theater, I'm hoping they start paying attention to Alan Grayson. Remember when he said, you know, here's the Republican health care program, don't get sick, number two, if you do get sick, die quickly. And, you know, that like kind of went viral. So I'm with you. The Democrats need to get more theatrical, and they need to get out there more. But they have been trying. They really have been trying. Sarah, thanks a lot for the call. And good luck on your march tomorrow. coming up next week on the Tom Hartman Program. While you're enjoying the holiday, tune in for on Monday. Tune in for my conversations with Senator Sherrod Brown on manufacturing and jobs, plus my friend and fellow progressive talk show host Joe Madison talking about the Voting Rights Act and a special Anything Goes you're not going to want to miss right here on the Tom Hartman Program. And don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. It requires you. Tag, you're it. We'll see you on Tuesday. I'll be here on Monday.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to tomhartman.com.